Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Let's welcome our first speaker, which will be Casey Kay from Sacramento, California.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm honored to be asked to speak on a panel at Iggy Paw. And I'm really nervous, and I'm cold, and I've had coffee, so shaking a little bit. And I'll probably get really comfortable about 17 minutes into this. Look at the time. So when I was asked to speak on principles before personalities, I was like, oh, I hope they don't announce that at my YPAW group. And thought people might start laughing or go, really? But, you know, what I can say is actually principles before personalities has been a big part of this, of the last year of my sobriety. So I figured I would touch just a little bit on the tradition itself. I'm not, you know, incredibly well versed on the history of it. But, you know, what I do know is, you know, the 12th tradition started out, more as the anonymity was to protect the, AA in the sense that they didn't have enough people to, you know, reach out to all the alcoholics. So they wanted to, you know, keep it quiet. And then it became, part of the public eye. And when AA started, you know, getting attention, so that nobody was an authority on it. Nobody was more important than another. And then eventually evolved into keeping AA attractive to the public so that people weren't turned off by it. So they know they could come to a safe place. And then keeping it attractive to the newcomers. As an alcoholic, I'm very, I'm self-obsessed. I want what's best for me. And I grew up with a lawyer father, and from a young age, he was always challenging me, and we'd have political discussions when I was like 7. And he always challenged me to kind of make a point, make a good point. And so I've grown up making points. And I'm the type that will reiterate my point. And I actually, my tradition sponsor, who I worked with for a while, said it perfectly, essentially. Something I could relate to is, you know, if I make my point and you don't agree with it, I think you didn't understand me, you know. And then if I do it again, you know, I'm like, okay, I really have to explain this. And then the third time, if you don't get it, I'm just like, you're an idiot, you know. I mean, like, clearly. Because the concept of somebody disagreeing when I feel like I'm making a really good point is I don't get it. And so, you know, in growing up, I spent a lot of time, I think, you know, one, fighting for the little guy, as long as it served me. I love arguing for the sake of arguing, which does not lend well, to relationships, to YPAW, to my home group. And I'll tell you a little bit about my first, really eye-opening experience with principles before personalities, and it was at my home group. And there were three of us, and so I get a little bit of knowledge about the traditions, and I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm going to go teach everybody what they need to know. And my home group is very close to my heart. It's, you know, it's the group that really took me in when I moved to Sacramento, and I will forever be grateful for it. And this, you know, and what happened was, and they're pretty relaxed, you know, they follow the traditions, but they're not, you know, when we brought up the concept of a group inventory, a lot of people balked at that and were like, why? You know, like we're good with how it's going. And so for about 9 months, it was me and two other people, and every business meeting, you know, we were trying to really do what we thought was best and educate people and, you know, and the newcomers that came in, and we found it this great forum to change. And And because it was, you know, we were really passionate about it, and because it was coming from, at least for me, what I thought was a very genuine place, which it was, I didn't see it as harming the group. And, you know, and at one point, a group member said, literally after 9 months, you know, you guys come in and you talk about it, you know, all the time, and you're constantly trying to change this group, and we're okay the way we are. And it hit me, and I was like, oh my God, this has been an agenda. You know, this has been about what I think is right, not about what I think is best for the group. And I didn't take the time to think about that. And so it hit me hard, and I was very sad because I didn't mean to do that. You know, but I was not thinking about what's good for the whole. And, you know, on the WIPAW committee that I'm involved in, we've had a few experiences with principals before personalities. And what, you know, I learned from that is there was one year about 2 years ago that we had two major issues back to back. And one involved, two members on the committee, and the law got involved at one point. And, you know, and you'd hear one side of the story and you go, ooh, that's bad. And then you'd hear the other side of the story, you go, oh, that's worse, you know, and it was really challenging not to take sides on the issue. But ultimately, you know, we had to put the group first, and the chair and the co-chair were brilliant at the time, even though I really, you know, looking back, because if I, at the time I thought, oh, I would do that differently. But, you know, they sat down with the group members and with the two group members, and they came to a conclusion, and fortunately one of them stepped down. But what happened that time, it was very divisive for the committee, and we had to look at what was best for the whole. And in that instance, it was, because it was a big instance, because it was, something that I think was really challenging, it was almost easier to place principles before personalities. Because I really, like, for me, I really had to think about it. And then a little bit later, about 2 months later, again, you know, there was an issue and the law was involved. And, you know, and AA is not an authority. You know, we are not the law. And at the same time, we are not, you know, above the law either. But, and we had to look at all the traditions, and we had to look at, you know, mainly, you know, anybody that says they're an alcoholic, you know, is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, you know, there was a group of us that had to sit down and really look at the traditions and place principles before personalities. Because even though, like, me personally did not agree with what was happening, I couldn't, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, judge them and say, you know, you need to get out of the group. You know, this is not a place for you. You can't do this. And so again, because it was such a large issue, it seemed a lot easier to deal with. It's the regular business meetings that are a challenge for me. It's, you know, and I get in there and, you know, again, I mean, my intentions are as pure as I think they can possibly be. And I do want what's best for the group, but I get lost, you know, in the agenda. And what I find myself, often doing is I don't quite think about the unity of the group until after I've said it. And I'll raise my hand again and be like, we should totally focus on the unity of this. You know, to kind of clean up the mess that I feel I've made. Now, granted, I am, you know, like I said, incredibly self-obsessed. So I think sometimes I'm a little bit harder on myself as to, maybe the damage that sometimes I feel I caused to the group. And what that looks like for me, you know, in a business meeting is when I feel like somebody is, maybe like we'll talk about a budget and I feel somebody's being exorbitant with the budget, and I will raise my hand and I will say why that's, you know, that's not a good idea. And, you know, I've been on this committee for 3 years, you know, and, you know, and trust me, like this hasn't worked in the past. And then I'll raise my hand again to clear up that point. And then I might raise my hand a third time, you know, and make my point. And so this is not ideal. I upset a lot of people. I actually was told by my fiance that I'm the chair's worst nightmare. And I think it's because, you know, I tried it. My father's my hero, and I try to emulate him. And what you end up with is somebody who tries to talk like a lawyer, who does not have a law degree, who has never gone to school for law, and you know, and try to sound really authoritative and just end up annoying a lot of people. So that's something that I've been really challenged to work on this past year. And in my relationship, we have absolutely, as YPAW members, had to place principles before personalities. As YPAW members, we don't really agree with each other, you know? And there are things that he does that I'm like, oh, I wouldn't do that. And there are things that I do that, you know, he absolutely disagrees with. Not necessarily disagrees with, but our personalities in a business meeting setting don't go together. And I am the type of person that also, like, my faces, like, you'll tell, like, I have to really control my faces. Last night there was somebody behind me that was talking so much during the meeting, and I'm the type that will turn around and give a look, you know? I'll be like... And all I could think is, you're speaking on a panel tomorrow about principles before personalities. This is charming. After this panel, all that goes out the window. But no, I'm kidding. You know, and so even just my expressions sometimes will lend themselves to extreme disapproval. And you know, and I am part of my inner group. And what I've found in my inner group is yet again the same issue. And they're, you know, those people that raise their hand and it's like, oh God, no, not again, you know, or you know you disagree with them and you're just, oh, you don't want to hear it. And again, my face becomes that, like, just, oh, don't work on it. And there's this one person in my inner group who, and we've had some issues over last year, and this issue had to do with a group who was potentially using the Bible in a meeting, and so that's obviously quite the hot button issue, and I actually kind of agreed with what he was saying, but because it was him, I felt obligated to raise my hand and make an opposite point. And, you know, and again, that's not conducive to the group. And what ends up happening is after I've raised my hand, after I've made my point, I'm like, oh, you need to stop this. And what I do instead of, you know, more times than not, and again, trying to work on, is that I won't go up to that person after the meeting. You know, I'll leave, you know, because my pride's been hurt, you know, because I'm not acting the way that I would ideally act as an alcoholic. The amazing thing about being of service is that I get to grow. If I continue to be of service, I get to watch my behavior and I get to continue to change it. And I will say I've seen some improvement this year. I don't know if that's because the chair actually likes me. You know, whatever. And what my principles before personalities in my work, where I work has been, you know, the biggest challenge this year. Most people at my work don't know I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a group of them who I worked with because we merged with another company. I was 6 months sober when I started working there, so like everybody knew I was an alcoholic. And it was a way to protect myself because it was the drinking culture, you know, in sales, and people would go out after and I would be like, okay, you know, I'm sober. And I set that up. And fortunately, we were all pretty close. And although I think there's a good chance I didn't make it look so attractive at some points. But, you know, when we merged with this new company, it wasn't, some people think I drink. Some people know that I don't drink. And there are a few members that know that I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been disclosed in, you know, two women have actually opened up about, their daughters that are going through some serious issues. And at that point, you know, I will disclose that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will try to be of help. And I do take what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous into actual work meetings. And I will think about what's good for the whole. I find it an amazing place to practice these principles. But one thing that I noticed this last year, and it was a huge eye-opening experience for me, how I don't practice the principles, is one of the guys that I've worked with for 5 years. We have a love-hate relationship. We're very similar. The way it's set up, there's six of us in this one section, and we're all in sales and fairly competitive. And three of us had to share one CSR, customer service rep. And there was another one that, you know, only had two. And then there was another agent, this particular one, who had his own CSR. And I just, that was not fair. And I would lobby, you know, be like, we need to change this. His book isn't, you know, like, this is unrealistic. Our other CSRs are going crazy. And so finally, one day, I was like, I found out that it was going to be restructured. And I'm like, he is going to get what's coming to him. And I was so satisfied. And I just, I was enjoying the amount of pain that I thought he would be in. And what happened is he had gotten a DUI. And so he, you know, and he said, you know, he's like, Case, I have to go to 10 AA meetings. Can you tell me about one? Tell me which ones I can go to so basically I can get it over with. And I was like, okay, you know, like we work in, whatever. There's a group that meets all the time close to our office. So I said, hey, you know, like I'll go to one with you at lunch. And so we go and, you know, and it's one of those meetings I'm like, oh man, this is really boring. You know, I feel bad for this guy that he has to sit through this, you know, and I'm all concerned for him. And we walk out of the meeting, we go get lunch. And he said, you know, I really identified with what that one guy said. And all of a sudden, my entire attitude toward him changed. And I had great amounts of compassion toward him. And because he identified as an alcoholic and because I could understand his pain, I just thought, oh my God, I need to, you know, I need to be there for him. And I didn't want him to suffer all of a sudden. It was like, oh God, no, you suffer enough if you feel like you're an alcoholic and, you know, and you don't have a solution. And what I realized is like, so out in the world, like, I don't think about other people's stories. If I don't know them, then, you know, I don't act outside of the rooms that I act the way that I ideally act inside of the rooms. I don't have the same amount of compassion for people. And that was a slap in the face. And I called my sponsor and I said, I am not practicing principles before personalities outside of the rooms of AA. Not that I practice them brilliantly inside, but and so this last year has really been about trying to remember that everybody has their story, that everybody deserves compassion. And that this is not, you know, it doesn't need to always be this competitive atmosphere. And, you know, principles before personalities is about humility. It's about not being more than or less than anyone else. You know, your opinion's not less important than mine. You are either better than me or you are lower than me. And it is a constant struggle to reach, some sort of level of humility around that. And so, like I said, you know, this last year, it's been a huge part of my life and I continue to grow with it. And I think right now I'm probably a better example of a bad example. And I will ideally continue to grow in this. And so, like I said, I'm honored to be able to speak at IKIPA, and thank you.
Thank you, Casey. Our next speaker is Joel S. from Houston, Texas.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Joel.
Hi, Joel.
So, I have a short attention span, so I make notes when I talk, even when it's only 20 minutes. So I have those here. I really enjoyed what she said. I told her before the meeting that if she went first, I was just going to steal all the good points that she made and just kind of expound upon those. So I don't know if I'll do that or not. But I told my sponsor about 3 weeks ago that I'd been asked to speak on a panel at IKIPAW about principles before personalities. And he just laughed out loud, and he was like, do they know who you are? Just like, oh, thanks. Thanks, buddy. I've been working with him for 8 years. This is the joke that he makes for me. So I made some notes last night, and, you know, the first thing is that I don't know that it's in any sort of AA approved literature, but the most widely used list of the 12 principles that I could find was honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, brotherly love, justice, perseverance, spirituality, and service. And so ultimately, when I'm talking about principles before personalities, what I'm talking about is putting those things before how I feel about other people or other situations or, you know, how I want to react to situations that go on. You know, basically, my experience with principles before personalities, you know, didn't really start with AA. It started before that because my parents, before I even started drinking, put me in a position where I had the ability to learn right from wrong and how to treat people and, you know, give respect and do this stuff. And innately, I'm a selfish, self-centered person, and I'm fearful most of the time. And so the way that comes out is that I'm either, you know, in most cases, I'm afraid that I'm not going to get what I want, or if I do what I'm supposed to, I'm going to lose something that I have, or, you know, or whatever. So that puts me in a position, or put me in a position a lot before I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, where I did what I needed to do for me, and I didn't really have any regard for how that was going to affect anybody else around me, which doesn't really fall in line with any of those 12 things that I just listed off. And so I was in conflict a lot with you know, people, places, and things around me, which ultimately led to finding drinking as a solution and then using that for a pretty good period of time. And when that stopped working, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous by a higher power that I call my parents. you know, it was like, if you don't go, you don't get to live with us or drive the car that we paid for or have any money that we gave you and stuff. And it was like, all right, well, that's an easy decision. So I came here to keep everything that I had. And since I'm such a dummy, I didn't do what I was supposed to do and I ended up screwing up and losing everything that I came to keep. So basically I end up with the shirt on my back and a bag of some stuff that they let me take with me. And at that point I had a decision to make, you know, and it's like, am I going to continue doing the way that I'm used to doing them that I think works? Everybody around me is telling me it doesn't, but I think it still kind of works. Or am I going to try something different? And, obviously I tried something different because I'm here. Or maybe not, obviously, but I did try something different. Because none of you guys know me except this group right here. So, so you know, the bottom line is I was told to do this stuff in order to stay sober and become a better person and, you know, learn how to be like a complete human being. And that included, you know, going to meetings and finding a sponsor and working the steps and enlarging my spiritual life and being of service to others and, you know, that stuff that we do in AA to be good to each other and ourselves. And through that, you know, I started learning basically how to be a better person. And, you know, and slowly but surely those, you know, the importance of each one of those principles you know, started building in my life, and I started wanting to incorporate those things more regularly. I'm nervous too. My Red Bull just kicked in, so that's awesome. I'm like, basically from the very beginning of my sobriety, it's kind of like what she said. See, here we go. I'm going to steal it. The biggest, place that I've been able to start learning about principles before personalities and like putting those things into practice has been in committees, AA committees. And most of that for me has been conference committees. And, you know, I have a home group and I've had several home groups in my sobriety, and being involved in those, group consciences always brings up an opportunity to practice those principles. You know, because I don't always agree, and I don't know if anybody else in here is like this, but I'm opinionated, and I'm pretty sure that I know how to do things correctly. And, you know, everyone else in the room is pretty sure that they know how to do things correctly as well. And so sometimes that provides opportunities for conflict. So I raise my hand and I give my opinion, and then someone else raises their hand and they give their opinion, and then I raise my hand and I give my opinion more firmly, and then they raise their hand and give their opinion more firmly. And you know, if you're not careful of looking at the fact that there's a middle ground in every situation, it's real easy to walk into those committee meetings, or at least it has been for me, and find myself angry and upset with people who are my friends outside of those committee meetings. You know, and the thing that my sponsor, because the reason I started going to those committee meetings, conference committees, the home, you know, the group consciences and things of that nature, the reason I went there is because my sponsor told me to. Because he'd gone there, and this is how he learned to practice the principles, and this is how he learned to stay sober and you know, start to become a complete human being. And so I just did what he told me to do. And, you know, the bottom line with that is that I learned how to sit in those committee meetings and share what my experience is without telling you that my experience is the right way to do it. At least when I'm doing it well. I don't want to lie in front of my friends. And then accept what your experience with whatever that situation is for what it is, and try to come together and find what the middle ground is and what's best for the committee. Because ultimately it's not about what I think is best or what you think is best. It's what's best for AA and what's best for that committee at the time. You know, and I can get heated with people, and I can get upset with them, even when they're my best friends. And the thing for me is that I have to be able to walk out of that room and still love you unconditionally, and, you know, and not hold on to the disagreement or whatever it is that we had in that meeting. You know, and that's what my sponsor stressed to me, which is basically that everybody's got their own opinion, and if, as long as we can come together and work that stuff out in a way that doesn't hurt other people's feelings and, you know, carries those principles that we've learned, then we can still be friends outside the meeting, whether we disagree about things or not. And ultimately, I'm supposed to carry that message in every aspect of my life. You know, it's not just with committees. It's at school. It's at work. It's with people outside of AA. It's supposed to be on the freeway when I'm driving. That one's not so much. It's like people cut me off, and brotherly love is just kind of out the window. Although I don't follow them off the freeway anymore to let them know what I think about it. So I'm getting better with that, I guess. I don't know. my first home group I went to for like 6 years, and it was a step study, and so we would go through the big book and do each step. Once a week, we'd go through the entire step and read it through it, and everybody would share their experience. And then when we finished the big book, we'd go through the 12 and 12, and then we'd go back. And so at one point, once a month, we would go through the traditions. You know, like birthday night would be tradition night, and so we'd read the tradition. Everybody would share their experience on it. And, the thing about the traditions is, as far as what my sponsor taught me, is that those have a practical application in my daily life. The steps are principles that I'm supposed to look at and learn from. And the traditions are things that I can actually put into practice in my daily life, you know. And so, something that when I was making my notes last night, I didn't bring a book with me, so I just Googled everything, on my iPhone. And so I wanted to read the long form of Tradition 12, and it says, "And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to practice principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all." That's a little bit longer and more boisterous than the one that's in the book. The thing about that for me is that when I boil that down, ultimately it means that, for me, I have to cultivate that sense of humility and like what she said, and not, thinking that I'm too big or too small, and recognizing that you're not too big or too small, and that when we're in a situation where we're having to make a decision that's, for the best of AA or for this conference or for our group or wherever, it's more about making sure that I'm not putting out there that my opinion is more important or better than yours because I have more experience, or I'm, I have a longer time sober or smarter or whatever, or even the other end, which is you're smarter than me or you have more experience or you have more time sober than me, because ultimately, like I said, it's all about what's best for that group or that committee or my employer and the people that I work with, or the people at that school that I go to, or the people on the freeway, as much as I hate that. Because I'm the type of person ultimately that, see, I don't know how all the freeways in the United States are run, but in Texas, there's like the exit and there's a lot of traffic sometimes, and people, you're supposed to just get in line, and follow the traffic off of the freeway. And some people like to, cut over to like the next lane over and run up all the way to the end and then cut through right before they hit those barrels that stop your car from driving into the concrete. And, so sometimes I do that. And then, and then when I'm waiting in line and other people do it, I'm like, that, man, it's hard. I gotta tell you, it's hard. That integrity. And when I'm doing it, every time that I've ever done it, I'm like, yeah, I'm that guy right now. And so the next time I'm reminding myself that I did it last time, so I can't be mad when they do it, and I just let them have some space to get in. So, I don't know. through working the steps and being involved in conference committees and being involved in the home groups that I've had in AA and caring about the people that I work with and for, and even, being a good family member. The bottom line is I try to be the best person that I can be in whatever situation and not offer any more than I should about what I think is right. And ultimately that boils down to sitting in the committee meeting And if I'm asked what my opinion is, or if I'm asked what my experience is, then I give it, and I don't tell you that if you disagree with me, you're wrong, even if I'm thinking it in my mind. Because I don't know if that's ever going to go away. I'm not perfect. You can ask the people that came with me, really who I am and what I do, and they'll give you a better representation than I will, because I want it to look good, ultimately. but, you know, every experience that I've had, with taking a look at putting the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous before the personalities that I encounter, including my own, gives me more strength to do it better the next time. Because ultimately, I came here without a conscience. I was numb, and I didn't really care what you thought. And I didn't really care how my actions affected anybody around me, or even myself, really. And the longer I've stayed sober, and the more importance that I've placed on those 12 things. Wow, the 20 minutes went really fast. The better it feels to just be honest with people and myself, and to continue to have hope even when I don't get what I want. And to have faith that everyone around me, and myself, are doing the best we can to care about each other and do what's right. And, you know, which provides the courage to continue doing it and have integrity to do the right thing even when nobody's looking. And continue to have the willingness to keep showing up and doing what I'm supposed to do even if I don't get my way. Or I don't agree with how things went. And to just be right-sized, you know, and have that humility and love you guys even if we disagree. Because ultimately, I'll die. If I drink, I'll die. And I have to remember that when you walk into Alcoholics Anonymous and you say that you're an alcoholic, that what you're saying is, if you drink, you're going to die too, and I have to help you. Even if I don't agree with you, or, even if we don't talk or hug or whatever, if you call me and tell me that you're going to drink and you need to go to a meeting, I got to take you. Ultimately, that's the most important thing. And so, thank you for not leaving, and thanks for coming to a 9 o'clock panel speaker.
Thank you, Joel. And our third speaker will be Drew B. from Martinez, California.
Thanks, Annalisa. My name is Drew. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Back Alley Sobriety Group in Walnut Creek, California. We meet on Wednesday nights at 8, so if you get lost and you find yourself in Walnut Creek, come to my home group. It's really good. Truck spoke a few weeks ago. And welcome to Northern California, if you're from Southern California, from other states like Southern California. I lived in Southern California for 5 years, and my roommate's over there, and a lot of my friends, and it's good to see you. My first Icky Paw was in Colorado in 1997, and ever since then, Icky Paw has been like a family reunion, and it's been... I show up and Bill's there making comments to the meeting. I bet he still remembers my birthday. I show up and, people have gotten grayer and fatter and have multiplied, and it's really awesome. Good job, you guys. It's good to hear you. I thought about what I was going to say today, and, first of all, before I get started, I want to make a little declaration. I think that you're at the 9 a.m. Principles Before Personalities panel at Icky Paw. You are an AA nerd. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you were at the meeting last night, Serena had a really great take on what AA nerds are and how they stay sober. So welcome, nerds. Takes one to know one. And well, I don't know. I've done a lot of conference work too, and I, for a long time, avoiding conflict was my way of practicing principles before personalities. And what I found is that conflict is inevitable, especially in life, and being afraid of it was not going to get me anywhere, because eventually I was going to have to start making choices in my life and carrying through with them, and also making lots of mistakes. Like, it's a guarantee that if you stay sober and start doing life, you're going to make lots of mistakes. So go out and get in that relationship in the first year and get fired and, like, do all that stuff. Get a divorce. I mean, just tear that ass up, because it's... Life is, you know, AA and being sober is not about not living. It's not about hiding in your AA meeting. It's about getting out there and doing life. And that's been my experience. So I read the, I did my homework and I read the traditions this morning, and I read the long form, and I crammed. I'm a good college student. I just got my master's degree, so I know how to do this. And the first line in the 12 and 12 talks about sacrifice. And when I read that line, it sort of came clear to me what people talk about when they talk about AA winners. You know, it used to be winners and losers. But I think because nerds are fashionable, it's become AA nerds now. And because nerds are running the world. .com. Are you following my train of thought on this one? And you know what? The way that I can see that you're going to stay sober, and that I relate to you, and that I want to hang out with you and stay sober with you, is that you're going to put the needs of the group before your own. That you're going to sacrifice. And that's what Bill writes about in the first sentence. He says, this tradition is about personal sacrifice, and that I'm not going to get what I want. And you know, when I, and by the way, I've been sober since December 6, 1995. I have a sponsor, and I worked steps, and I've had a spiritual experience because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I didn't get lost from the Salesforce.com conference or anything like that. what was I talking about again? My riff gun got jammed, and
You're qualified.
Oh, I'm qualifying, yeah. But I'm totally lost, by the way. Sacrifice? Yeah, sacrifice. Yeah, what can I talk about sacrifice? Anyway, when I going to give up, I found my spot. When I take guys through the steps, the most important page in the big book is page 62, because it talks about the core of my problem. And that is, I am selfish and self-centered. I am fearful and driven by 100 forms of fear. And it sums up my life before Alcoholics Anonymous, and even in Alcoholics Anonymous, in one paragraph. It says, I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self, blah, blah, blah. And I step on the toes of my fellows, and they attack me, seemingly without a provocation, because I'm so blind to my own little motives and what I want. My friend Greg Pasadena used to say, he had this, it was funny, there's this like AA house, you know, the AA house that gets passed down from generation to generation. And he said, the landlord one time, who's not an AA person, wrote, you know, I don't mind having you AA people live in my house, but you all suffer from the same problem. You have a blinding self-focus. And that's exactly, I think, what Bill was describing in page 62, is that I am so focused on getting my way that I'm going to run you over and it over, and I'm not even going to notice that I ran you over. And when you get pissed off and push back, I feel attacked. Like, you're attacking me, and stop hurting me, and I'm just trying to do the right thing. I'll hear that a lot in AA, you know, I'm just trying to do the right thing and get this, you know, get this conference off the ground, or whatever you guys want to do, you know. And so The hardest part for this is, first of all, recognizing that indeed I am the one who manufactures a lot of my problems. And I learned that when I worked the steps, and that was the first set of principles that I learned. I'm not one of those guys who thinks that there's a step or a principle behind the steps. No offense, Joel, but like, it's pretty clear in step 12 that says practice these principles in all our affairs, referring to the steps. And then it talks about, in the beginning of the 12 and 12, it talks about, you know, that the steps are a set of principles, spiritual in nature, that if practiced as a way of life, can allow the problem drinker to live happily and usefully whole. Like one whole person. Not like that shattered person that had to invent a personality for every occasion that I went to, but like a whole person operating. You know, it's like, do you remember that? Do you remember that when you were drinking or maybe new in sobriety where you had to remember the lies that you told the person that was standing in front of you because you had said you'd built up this big thing that you weren't? Maybe I was the only one. But that's my experience. And so that was the first set of principles that I learned, the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I applied them to my life and I got better. And when I started to really get my nerd on, in young people's AA, I was a couple years sober. Joby's back there. She was there when I was brand new. If you want to know what I was like when I was brand new, talk to that lady in the yellow tank top over there. I think she was in one of my first meetings. And when I really started to find, like, I caught the fire for young people's AA, I was 20 years old when I got sober. And I was excited. I came to Occupon, San Francisco in 96 or 7 or something like that. And I was not excited about being sober. Like, if you're sober and you can't buy alcohol, it's not something to jump on your chair and dance about. But I walked into the auditorium on Friday night, and there was dominatrixes and stuff, like swinging stuff around. You guys remember that? The old people, the gray crowd, do you remember that? And it was a lot like last night. And people were, except no dominatrixes. Maybe I didn't see them. But there were people excited about being sober. Like, they were pumped. And I caught that, like, instantly. I was like, you guys are excited about being sober? Like, this is fun? Like, we're having a good time? And so I got on my first conference committee. It was Ebipaw back in the 90s, back before their big camp out was a big camp out. It was like 30 people, and now it's like 500 people. And I left, and then things got big. That's kind of my track record with young people's conferences, is that right the year after I leave or move on, they get the conference, or the camp out gets really big and stuff like that. I'm sure it's all about me. Anyway, so when I started going to these young people's committees and we started sitting in business meetings and they were hours long and there was arguments, I didn't understand the whole thing, I started to realize that the real kung fu in an AA business meeting was the traditions. That when somebody misquoted the traditions, it shut the crowd up. You know what I mean? Like, they would mumble something that sounded like a tradition. Well, tradition 7 says it, blah, 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 blah. And people would be like, oh, I guess that guy's right. I guess we should give money to Red Bull. You know, like, let's do that. And that's actually taken from, it's an actual experience, at a Occupy business meeting in like 1998. I'm not throwing you guys under the bus. It was just one of the greatest business meetings ever. So I started to really like dig into the traditions like it was a homework assignment, you know? And studied them and where they came from and what they were about. And I started going to this meeting. This is a 12 and 12 study in my hometown. It was like the second meeting I went to, and it was these folks who are not in young people's AA, but they're really into the steps and the traditions and doing service and stuff like that. And so I started to learn about what these principles are. And then I got a few conferences and I realized that, at least from my perspective, like, every new conference had to, like, relearn the principles and relearn how to do a conference and all that kind of stuff. I've been on about 4 or 5 different young people's conferences. The last thing I did was I was the program co-chair for Iggy Paw in 2007 and in LA. That was, like, the best thing I've ever done in my life. It was so fun. It was so fun. Were you there? Anybody? Yeah, it was fun. So I also found out that there were these concepts too. There's the, so this, it's getting complicated now, right? So there's the concepts for world service. That's how AA relates to the world. And Bill wrote those even later in his life. And then there's an add-on to concept 12. That is the six warranties. And so that's 42 principles. That's a lot of principles to practice before personalities. I think like I spent my first 10 years just learning what the principles were. And, it got really complicated. And so when I try to like practice principles in, you know, at work and in relationships and stuff and in the family and stuff like that, I get lost on what principle I apply to the personality and if it's my personality or yours or where do I just, how does concept 9 interact with my leadership skills at work and in my leader in my relationship? I just don't know. And, the easy answer is that if it's going to benefit you and if it's the right thing, that's the right thing to do. And most of the time, at least in my experience, if I just get out of the way and let whatever system or process operate, it's going to work out just fine. And we're right back to page 62 in my experience, which is I am the one fucking it up. I really am. And so somewhere along the line, and I can go back from it, I learned about how to be a elder statesman as opposed to a bleeding deacon. Always trying to get my way, always trying to finagle, always trying to do that kind of stuff. And I learned that everybody gets to make their own mistakes. Like, who am I to make sure that you don't make a mistake, right? And that applies in a young people's conference. It applies to personal and romantic relationships. It applies to work. You know, people get to make their mistakes. That's how they learn. That's how I learn. So why would I want to, you know, circumvent their misery on figuring out how to become better at whatever they're doing? And so, if I could talk about one of my heroes in AA, this guy, Glenn, he'd say his last name, Glenn Loyster. He died in 2005 or six with 42 years of sobriety. He was my grand sponsor for a long time. The guy saved my life. And he was the, at least for my money, was the embodiment of somebody who practiced principles with poor personalities. And I say that with the full recognition that he was an imperfect guy. And that was the best part about Glenn, is that he was the most imperfect guy that I ever met. Because he was clearly open about his shortcomings, right? He would always talk about how he screwed that up, right? He was all too willing with a story about how he, you know, well, that marriage didn't work out. I mean, Glenn was married like six times, and he just blew it a lot, but he was always willing, A, to talk about his experience. He was always willing to let it out. And, you know, Glenn was married to a lady who left him for another lady, if you can follow that. And I was dating this girl who I thought I was going to marry who left me for another lady. And so Glenn called me up and he said, "Kid, I heard what happened to you. Let me buy you some lunch." And I don't know if you remember your first heartbreak in Alcoholics Anonymous, or maybe you haven't had it yet, but it seems like a fatal wound at the time. I think it's definitely a rite of passage to long-term sobriety. Because there is no principle that's going to fix it. It's just not going to get better because you called 11 people in AA today. It's just going to hurt. It's just going to hurt. And you're just going to have to like deal with it, right? And the best thing for me was just distract myself as long as possible so the hurt stopped hurting. And then I got back and did my life. But the thing that really saved me about Glenn is that he would sit, you know, he just told me what happened to him. That's it. Very simple. Simple old AA stuff. So, you know, the principles that I've talked about today in theory are very complicated, but in practice they're very simple. And they're Glenn's principles. I'm going to take him, lift them right out of his deceased mouth. Is that offensive? I think he'd want it that way. Juliet, you think? Yeah, he'd want it that way. Yeah, he was awesome. He would say things, which I think he stole this from somebody who's dead, was never underestimate the power and spiritual significance of silence. If you're thinking about saying something, do not say it. Just don't say it. It's not necessary, you know? Al-Anon has some great principles with that, if it's necessary or if it's right or if it's kind, right? Something like that. And those motherfuckers are right. They're exactly right. Don't say it. Just don't say it. And I've averted much misery by just not saying it. Don't say it. Glenn also used to say, you know, my life would be a lot easier if I didn't have so many goddamn opinions. Right, yeah. Should I say that again? My life would be a lot easier if I didn't have so many opinions. And so, you know, I practice over the last few years just not having an angle on that, right? Like, I'm going to concede that when it comes to your relationship with your boyfriend, I'm an uninformed group conscience. And I'm just going to smile and nod and say, oh, yeah. Yeah, I know how you feel. It sucks, right? Just these, like, kind of meaningless phrases. Like, I'm trying to empathize, but that's it. Like, I don't know. I don't know. You know, that's... I was ran into my buddy Michael at a meeting at my home group on Wednesday, and I was talking about the mating call of the double-digit sobriety guy. I was like, I don't know. But I don't know. But that's just the way it is. I know less. I know less now than I did when I had 5 years of sobriety. And it sounds like a cop-out, but it's true, because the weirdest shit continues to happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me tell you, it's not boring. It's the opposite of boring now. 15 years sober, opposite of boring. And I'm having lots of fun. And I guess that's it on the Glennisms. God, he was such a cool guy. I can't stop thinking about all the old timers who would ask me to. I would say, hey, what do you have to say? How can I carry your message? And they would say, carry the message. And I'd be like, oh, that's vague. Thanks. A few years ago, when Lord spoke at the conference, Lord's really into concept or tradition 12, and he talked about humility. And in the meetings I go to, I don't know about yours, but humility seems to be kind of a bad word. Yeah. People think that if you talk about it or if it's a topic that you don't have it, so it's like a big not it game, you know, like 1, 2, 3, not it. I'm not gonna, nope, because I am humble. I'm not gonna talk about humility, but. It's all over the 12 and 12. It's in, you know, in step 7, it's like, it says that humility is the key to sobriety, right? It's the key to sobriety. So why don't we talk about it some more? My favorite little bumper sticker definitions of it, I am no better, and humility is I am no better and no worse than any human being on the planet, right? The other bumper sticker that I like is, it's not thinking less of myself, but thinking about myself less. And so we get right back, at least in my experience, to counteracting page 62 in the big book. That I manufacture my own misery. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the problem. And when I practice principles and apply them to my life, I seem to magically get through it. And that's just me doing the AA action before my exquisite, engineered, wonderful opinion idea. Because I think I'm pretty smart, and I think I should probably get my way because I'm smarter than you. And it's just not the case, you know. I should probably just smile and nod and let you do what you need to do. And how much where am I on time? Am I up? 10 more minutes?
You're at
20. Oh. Oh, don't tell me that. Yeah. It's true. I don't know. I have been able to fool people into thinking that I am this man of integrity and that I'm a great leader because I've applied the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps, the traditions, and the concepts. or the warranties. I mean, you guys got iPhones. You can look up the warranties and stuff, right? And I've been able to do some pretty amazing things, you know, stuff that I wasn't supposed to do. I got here a mental patient. I was locked in a psych ward for a very long time when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started going to that 12 and 12 meeting. I was a real creepoid. I was scary. And not, you know, those scary, creepy guys who are like, he might have a bomb strapped to his abdomen. You know, where you like ask him a question, he just kind of looks at you and you're like, ooh. Huh. Keep coming back, buddy. And like I said, when I started learning what the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous were and applying to the other parts of my life, I started to be able to accomplish things, you know. Before Alcoholics Anonymous, and even in AA, I say too, I used to be offended about that line in the Big Book where it talks about young people, how they're just cute and cuddly little potential alcoholics, right? Like, look at you and your potential alcoholism. One day it's going to really kick in. But don't go there, guys, right? That kind of condescending. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And I used to get so offended about that. But as I got more gray hair and probably a little more humility in my life, I began to realize that, indeed, when I got here, I was a potential alcoholic. I did not experience years and years of misery that, you know, I didn't lose much because I didn't have much to lose. And what I actually did is suffer from alcoholism sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for years and years and years. And the flip side of learning what the principles are, we're making huge mistakes and learning how to correct them and stay sober anyway. And also find a God that was sufficient enough to handle my problems, you know. I think that's the thing that I forget to talk about most, is that I found a power greater than myself that was strong enough to handle my problems. And so I started applying the principles that I had learned, once I learned them, to relationships. And I had several successful relationships in a row. You know what I'm saying? I applied it to work. I started showing up to work and shutting up at work and just doing, trying to like do the job that I was paid to do at the level that I was paid to do it, and maybe even give a little bit more. And then I applied it to school, and I treated school like an AA meeting, which I covered the whole nerd thing. I sit in the front, I listen, I try and do some extra shit, you know, like, hey, can I help you pass out the how it works and all that kind of stuff? Okay, cool. And blew through undergraduate, just got my master's degree, same thing, and I just apply principles, and they seem to work out. The funny thing about the world is that they go, look at you, you're so special and great. What are you doing? How do you do all that stuff? And I just do AA stuff. That's all I do. Like, I got a master's degree and worked and was very busy and still went to three meetings a week, still went with the sponsees that I had. There was never an excuse where I was like, well, yeah, I'm just a little too busy. And I had all the ammo in the world to not go to AA and to drop a few sponsees, and I didn't, you know. God seemed to give me enough strength to get through it all, and I did it. It's cool. The guy who was strapped to a table because of his alcoholism for 5 days got a master's degree. It's still weird to me. Still weird to me. So, I don't know. If I could talk one more little subject, yeah, one more little thingy, one little riff, if I could, and that's about getting sober young and learning how to be sober and practicing the principles in the law of affairs, and then getting what you want, which I think it's the most dangerous thing for an alcoholic is getting an alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous is getting what you want. Because I don't know about you, but I came to AA and I just didn't have any stuff, right? I didn't have anything. I was young and I was stupid and I was messy and weird and I smelled funny and nobody liked me and, you know, I was all jacked up. And then I started to get all this stuff, and it seemed logical that I would get the stuff that I wanted when I came to AA, and when AA gave it to me, mission accomplished. Time to leave AA, right? I mean, it just makes sense, is that I came all broken and you guys fixed me up and I just like, well, just walk right out the door and everything's cool. And that's usually what happens, is that That's why a lot of people, I think, leave is because they get what they wanted. They get the relationship or the job or the money or the kid or the body that they were always wanting because they did P90X or I don't know what the hell they want. But, like, and this is bring me to the final kind of sponsor trickle-down saying. And this came from my sponsor. And he said, I never want to let the life AA gave me get in the way of my AA life. And that principle, that's a principle, it becomes harder and harder to practice when more and more of the good stuff that I experience gets in the way of my AA life, you know? And, you know, this is not a new thing. It's just I don't come across this idea very often. Because the people who are living this problem are not in AA anymore. You know, like they're out doing whatever they need to do or whatever. And there's this guy, Bill, who I've gone to meetings with for a long time, Bill M. And I said, Bill, what's more dangerous to alcoholics, success or failure? And he's, well, success. Success. Easily. You know, and it's especially true with young people, you know, like it was just a phase. I was young and I don't know. And so that has been probably the most challenging area for me to practice principles is that even though I have evidence that I don't need Alcoholics Anonymous anymore, I apply the principle and do it anyway. Right? Like I don't look, did you think alcoholic when you saw me this morning?
Yeah.
Or did you think Don Draper and Mr. Rogers had a fat baby? That's what I thought when I got dressed this morning. I want the chubby Mr. Rogers Don Draper look. I nailed it, didn't I? And as I accumulate and practice these principles and my life gets better, it's so much easier for me to say, you know, it was a phase. I have all this stuff. I have evidence. I have ammunition that I am not sick anymore. And for a lot of people, you know, you get married, you have the kid, your time becomes your number one commodity. And I have to, and this is the most valuable principle that I can talk about this morning, I have to remember that AA gave me this life. And no matter what, continue to keep it at the center of my life, no matter what, good, bad, other, and it's the good that's going to keep me out. So you know, I've been sober 15 years. I still go to 3 meetings a week. I still sponsor guys. I still do service. It's the same thing that I did when I was brand new, and so hopefully next Dicky Palm, when I see you guys so much more later, when you have me on the Gee, aren't you old panel or whatever, which is that's the panel I spoke on at ACCIPAW, is that, look at you, you're old now. Isn't that great? Let's talk about it. That's what's going to keep me here. Still go to meetings, still help others face over, still do service. That's it. I don't care what's going on in my life. That's what I'm going to continue to do. So it was an honor for me to speak at ACCIPAW. I'm looking forward to the weekend. It's going to be awesome. Thanks for letting me speak.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.